Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Beth Corning, dancer, choreographer, artistic director of Corning Works. Welcome to Berg Vivant.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
There is a presence that dancers have. And when it's delightful to be in that presence. Are you able to like spot a dancer when you see one? Like if you're in the line at Starbucks, that person's a dancer.
Yeah, kind probably.
By how they hold themselves or walk
themselves
and present themselves.
Yeah, but yeah. It used to be pretty easy. I used to live on West 65th Street, across from Lincoln Center in New York. And you'd always watch the kids from Juilliard carry these bags that were far bigger than they were. And walk like a duck, you know? and we'd always giggle, you know, like, oh, there goes one.
Now, is that part of training or just how you would have to manage a bag like that?
That's actually very funny.
Okay.
supposedly it's the training,
all
that turnout. And it, you know, you as dancers and anybody in New York, you are always out all the time. So you don't keep running back to your house. You don't have a car to throw things in. So you carry your life in bags.
And here we are in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Carrying our life in bags and other things and in
everything.
Cocktail glasses.
Oh, yes. Cheers.
Cheers. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
It's lovely to be here in the New Hazlett Theater with you.
Yeah.
Where one of your works will be performing shortly. But is it accurate to call Corning Works a dance company?
Yeah. That's what makes it so confusing, because everybody likes labels and everybody likes institutions. And it's not a company. It's very good. You're very good.
I try.
You're good.
I've also had a couple of these, so we're doing
good.
All right.
It's very good. No, it's not a company. And I guess when I thought about putting together Corning Works, I knew I did not want a company. I did not want to take care of people. I did not want a staff. I did not want real estate. I wanted a vehicle that I could be an artist. And I could think creatively, that my 90% of my time was not spent taking care of other people.
Hmm.
Been there, done that, and I threw those t-shirts away. But Corning Works is really an umbrella that shields me. And it allows me to create works that I'm interested in, which is a big step for most artists, particularly in this day and age where things are so product-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
What I have done now, this is the Corning Works 5th anniversary.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
You don't look a day over 4.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's just lovely. So what I've done now, because of funding and how to do things, and also because I did not know what to do with time on my hands, I really didn't. I'm not good with just too much thinking time.
Idle hands are the devil's workshop. Have you heard that?
Yes, but I've never quite understood that.
Oh. Because I think it's if you don't have anything to do, you'll get up to mischief.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that's a saying. Whether you take it as good or bad.
Right. No, this is... So what I've done is now I have 2 set seasons a year, and which has worked out for this last past year, I'm beginning to get into the rhythm. It's really pretty great. So I have a season in September, and we have a season in March. And with this series that I started before I moved to Pittsburgh, called the Glue Factory Project, I basically invite artists of national and international critical acclaim that they really have seasoned backgrounds. They're all over 40, hence the Glue Factory, but I'll come back to that.
Sure.
So I invite who I want. And so I work for a good 4 months, 5 months with these people, 4 months to put the production together. I have a month off to clean that one up, and I start into the next one. And it's always, not always, but for the most part, with different people all the time, because the subject matter is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pull different people in who I feel are going to push me in directions I ordinarily would not go.
Is the Glue Factory a horse reference?
Yes.
Because when a horse is, shall we say, past its prime, they end up in the Glue Factory?
Yes.
That's very funny. But I think it speaks to what may be part of the mission of that project.
Yep.
Because, you know, I always hear this about dancers and the business of dance and the art of dance, that you have such a short window to really make your career. Simply, I think, because when you get to a certain age, it's tough to be doing these physical feats on stage.
Right.
That's got to be a challenge.
The interesting thing is that it used to be, I lived in Europe for years, and women would retire at 42 from major dance companies. I think men were 45. I think at my prime as a physical dancer at 45, I think I got it.
Hmm.
I got it. I thankfully had a body that was not injured, you know, constantly being injured and things like this. But what an older performer brings to a gesture is something that a young dancer cannot. It's like a half full, half empty glass. When you're 40 and over, this vessel that you have has so much more, so many more layers, so much more to talk about, so much more to give, so much more experience to exude from.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, to have a 50-year-old dancer do something like this, which wasn't very good, but whatever, is going to be a lot packed and breathtaking than a 20-year-old dancer who needs to be doing, you know, and that physical beauty of your legs.
Right.
Up to
it takes on a different meaning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the vessel is different.
Margot Fonteyn, one of the top dancers of the world, ballerinas of the world, danced until she was in her 50s with Nureyev, who was much younger than she. And in ballet, there is a term called arabesque, and it's when the dancer takes, you know, their leg, man or woman, up very high behind them. And Fonteyn had this little arabesque, little low 45-degree arabesque. I remember sort of seeing that. I was young. And I remember thinking, how elegant. How elegant. And so when I came up with the Glue Factory project, a colleague of mine, it was supposed to do a show with me in New York. And he said, I'm really sorry, I have to bow out. And he was a big name. And I, oh, shit. There goes my public. And what am I going to do? And he said to me, I really hate to do this to you, but Mr. Baryshnikov has asked me to join the White Oak Project. I said, Misha? He said, yeah. And I said, Beth, I can't, you know, please understand, this is a big thing. And it's all of us old people. And don't forget, we were all in our 30s about then.
Mm.
He said, it's all us old people. It's sort of like the Glue Factory. And I suddenly went deaf and I went, the what? And I went, can I have that name? He goes, yeah, you can do whatever you want. I said, good, okay, but here's the deal. If you want me to hire you again, maybe I'll consider it, but the Russian kid, no.
Mm.
But, and I kept that in my back pocket. And then years later, I'd been running my own company called Corning Dances and Company for about 20 years, and I was getting tired. I suddenly realized I was much older than everybody in the company. I was 40 and they were 20. It wasn't what I started. Mm-hmm. You know, I danced with my friends. I danced with my colleagues. We were all in it together, and suddenly I was the boss. I didn't want to be a boss.
It's lonely at the top.
Yeah. It's terrible.
But somebody's got to do it.
But particularly for me, I wasn't interested in that. Mm. And I really was interested in the community. And I loved the process. So when I decided what to do next, I sort of did a transition time. And I started the Glue Factory in 2000. And it sold the house out, boom. I mean, I was in Minneapolis, and it was a house about this size at Théâtre de la Jeune Lune, which was a brilliant space in Minneapolis. Anybody knows Minneapolis, it was the space to be. The best company, theater company ever.
Wow.
Brilliant. And it sold out.
The concept is, it's so smart, it's so artistic, you know, there's a lot of depth to it. Is it a rarity in dance performance that I don't want to call it a company, but or a dancer, a company would be operating that way with that concept of everybody over 40? Do you find that that's
there's
rarity?
There's a couple. The most well-known, of course, is Netherlands 2, can never keep track of it, but that was a lot of retired dancers from the Netherlands Dance Theater, the best of the best of the best of the best. And they were far better than the top. I mean, these were the best. And they kept, Yuri Kilian kept making works for them.
Well, when it comes to Europe, do you feel that, or when it comes to dance, do you feel that Europe gets dance more so than America?
Well, there's a culture for it. The American psyche just doesn't have. It depends on where you are. I mean, America is such a huge country. You go to New York, it's the epicenter of culture.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, it's still considered that, even though now there are Boston and Chicago and California. And, you know, I mean, there are places that are really generating interesting work. I don't think that we just have a different kind of spirit in this country than Europe does towards culture, I think. And it's apples and oranges to try to compare the two. We just don't have that kind of history. We're not as old. Mm. but Paradigm Dance Company in New York were all older dancers. They tended to be Gus Solomon pulled them together. They tended to be the same sort of group of people that kept performing works. My idea was I kept bringing in different people, and also actors and musicians and music people and dance people together.
So what have you seen to be the effects and results and responses to your work with Corning Works and the Glue Factory here in Pittsburgh?
I think it's growing.
Yeah?
I mean, you know, things don't move fast here.
Yeah, another a reason why the Glue Factory right. might be an apt title.
It takes a while for things to stick here, but our reputation, thank God, is growing. Again, most people really here don't really know what dance theater is, because it's really dance theater, which is a genre that takes very different disciplines and puts them all together.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is, for lack of a better term, a stereotype that dance gets, because just ingrained in the public consciousness, we see a ballerina on stage,
right.
And I think those who have not thoroughly appreciated dance have the assumption that, oh, that's what I'm going to see,
yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, but Corning Works certainly does blend a lot of elements, a lot of very theatrical elements, and performers that may not necessarily be dancers.
Correct. In this show, the one that's coming up March 25th, we open at Once There Was a House, has John Gresh, who is well known in this community
as
an actor. Big guy.
I saw the publicity photo. John Gresh with a tiny house on his head.
Yeah. Yeah, he's lovely. Yes. Oh, God, he's beautiful. John Gresh, not a dancer, but he's dancing. Jackie Dempsey from Squonk Opera, which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is not an opera company. Wonderful musicians. Not a dancer. Dancing brilliantly. But they're also doing their bit as well. And then, of course, there are dancers in this. Michelle De La Rosa from Attack Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Tamar Rochelle Tolentino, for people who know about PBT, really was one of the most beautiful dancers. Beautiful dancer, still is. Breathtaking, breathtaking. And Yoav Kadar, who's danced with the likes of Paul Taylor and Palablis and Peter Pucci and big name companies. And so.
So it's a wonderful blend.
Yeah, it's a wacko cast.
Yeah. And this, at once there was a house, this is sort of the telling of what would happen in the future of the classic couple, Dick and Jane.
Yeah, they weren't a couple. Dick and Jane were the children. In 1930, primers, these reading primers, came into the world. And they lasted almost to the 70s. So all of us baby boomers, which I am one, were weaned on this, look, Sally, look. And it was a very specific kind of teaching children how to read.
See Jane run. It was almost like caveman-esque in a way.
It was very simple. Yeah. No, it was not eloquent, and nothing ever happened.
Yes, yeah.
And they were all blonde. They were all white. The beautiful illustrations were watercolor, very beautiful. Mm-hmm. The mother was incredibly thin and very beautiful, always with a little apron or a hat and gloves, as per reflective of the times. And the father always came in. There was a little spotted dog. There was a baby named Sally. And it was perfect.
Sounds like hell to me.
Well, I think what it did was, I don't remember any of us thinking our life was, that was reflective of our lives. I don't think any, because nothing happened. But if you were a black child, if you were an Asian child, if you had dark hair, or you were anything but this little blonde cherub, that was not your world at all. And now what do they look like? So from 1950 to 2015, whatever happened to Dick and Jane? And it's sort of this very warped, I don't know how often you really need to know this, but it's a very warped sort of romper room, which you probably don't even know what that is.
Oh, I do remember.
Oh, you do?
Miss Molly, I watched her.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yep.
My God. Okay. So it's a romper room reunion.
And John Gresh with a tiny house on his head.
Yeah. John Gresh.
So now, are there words to this, or is this all strictly movement?
No, okay. There's text. There's some text in it. There was a writer, can't think of his, Levine. I want to say James Levine, in 1958, wrote a Dick and Jane Hamlet.
Oh, my. Now, Hamlet's a good 5 hours or so.
This isn't
is.
5 hours.
Okay. I can't imagine.
This
see Hamlet it. Stab.
Pretty much. It was written for first graders.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we have a little bit of that. And there's some text in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is it a comedy, a dark comedy, a drama? How does it come
it's
off?
It's a dark comedy. I mean, this is really the fourth iteration of this work. It was originally commissioned in 2005 for Cleveland's Groundworks Dance Theater, David Shimo Takahara. And it was for a group of very classically trained dancers, very beautiful, beautiful dancers, who David and I had been colleagues for a long time. He invited me, said, will you come set a work for me? Yeah. And I don't know where this came from, but I did this on them. And it was like shocking. You know, it was like, I don't think his audience has ever seen anything like this. And they did a good job. And I remember thinking, okay, that's an interesting work I made. Came back. I had just become director of Dance Alloy Theater. So I set it on them. And, you know, I tweaked it because it's everybody who performs it, it's theirs. They have to. Every Dick and Jane is a little different. Depending upon who was performing it. And then that company sort of changed a little bit, and a couple of years later I thought, oh, I think I'll bring this back. Which I don't too often didn't really even do with my own company, Corning Dances and Company. And all right, I brought it back with a little different cast because the dancers had changed. And it got a little crazier, but it was still only a half hour work. Fine. And then when I realized, well, it's the fifth anniversary of Corning Works, and that's a big deal in the sense that every company, every artist in America is struggling. All the arts are struggling in this company. The funding gets less and less. The mentality of Americans now is that they're so overloaded. Your phones, your iPods, your iPads, your anything you want on TV whenever you want it. So much on TV, so much on any kind of viral thing that you want. People don't go to the theater as much. It's too bad because the live visceral experience is such a extraordinary experience. You just don't get that sitting at home.
And it's my hope that that's actually what's going to make it so much more popular, is that it's going to become a rarity because everything's so instant on your phone, so that live engagement, I hope we don't pull away from it. Because I'm even finding it's difficult to have conversations with people now because everybody would just rather send you a couple words in a text.
My phone, yeah. Well, no, yeah.
People don't converse. Nobody calls to talk to anybody anymore.
No, they text you.
Right.
And they don't answer their phone. You missed the last piece, which was called Parallel Lives,
right,
which was all about that.
Oh, well, that would have been a great one to see.
It shocked a lot of the college students who came. They all got nervous.
They said
they weren't going to pull out their phones.
Scare them, Beth.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a scary time. But
What scares you?
About life in general?
Yeah.
That I'm going to die?
That's a good one. Yeah.
I think that's scary.
That one day.
It's fast. I'm on the other side. You're not there yet. I'm on the other side.
I'm catching up.
No, you're not. Let me tell you. But yeah, I think, am I afraid of dying? I'm not happy about it. I'm afraid of the way the world is going. I'm afraid of all the media. I'm afraid of when the world's falling apart. You know, as they say, going to hell in a handbasket, we're concerned about Hillary Clinton's emails.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a good thing.
Yeah.
We've got Congress who's got Netanyahu being invited, and there's...
Oh, that was... Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of political stuff that's happening, and should not be allowed. It shouldn't be happening with humans. And that's scary. I think the world is a scary place. So I think that the idea of this, even trying to go into this idea of Dick and Jane, is a reality check.
Yeah.
So it is, as you asked, it's a dark work. It's very humorous. It's been reviewed as humorous, poignant, all these things. And now that I've made it an hour long, and I have people performing it who actually know who Dick and Jane are.
Yeah. Very good.
It makes a difference. It's really layered. It's incredibly layered. I mean, it's now in the place where I'm actually watching rehearsals and I get lost. You know, I'm getting lost. And someone, well, what do you think of that? I go, I didn't take any notes. I'm watching. I'm sorry.
That's got to be a great feeling.
It is. I have the best of the best.
You do. Yeah, that was quite a roster there.
But I always do. So with these glue factories, you do in the sense that they are the best of the best. These are people who have been on stage, more on stage than they have anywhere else in their lives. And so this place that we get to be in is our home.
Yeah.
You know, we're at home here. This is, you know.
And I keep going back to, you know, something that you had said, because, you know, I have a lot of insecurities when it comes to dance, because I am not a dancer. But, you know, if I get a beat going, you know, have a good time.
You're very good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when no one's watching, sure. But where do you draw the line as far as the definition between dance and movement, a dance piece and a movement piece? Because I've heard both descriptions. I've heard both titles assigned to something. What is really the difference?
You're very good.
That's why I get to wear the bow tie.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a quick answer for that. For me, I don't know if there's a difference. I think there's preconceived notions.
And maybe that in itself is the difference.
I mean, movement is dance. Dance is movement. There are so many different kinds of dance. There's so many different kinds of movement. There's classical dance. There's modern dance. There's contemporary dance. There's hip-hop dance. There's ethnic dance. There's hybrid dance. There's show dance. There's the TV dance I think upset every real professional dancer. The So You Think You Can Dance thing, where the guy kept saying, "Your routine." It was a routine.
Which is appropriate if we're in like vaudeville or something.
Or a recital. It was a routine, and what was the other word? Oh, lyrical dance.
Does that make any sense?
What the hell is lyrical dance? Because it was all contemporary dance. So it was like, and we kept thinking, if you're going to further dance with this show, which I think it did, and they brought on some, those kids could move.
Yeah.
I mean, those kids could they all dance? Could they all really be...
Well, if you're going to go on a show called So You Think You Can Dance, you probably should have a pretty good estimation of what your talents are.
But that's what's interesting, because they were looking for commercial dancers.
Yeah.
And they were looking for people who could do absolutely everything. Most professional dancers I know could not do all those styles that they were asking those kids to do.
Well, if I had to tell you what I feel my preconceived notions would be of dance versus movement. I mean, if I had to line the two of them up together, in my mind, dance would seem to be a little bit more governed by music, whereas movement would be guided a little bit more by the story that it had to tell. But that could be true of either, couldn't it?
So, no. So, no. No.
Well, I know, because dance can very much tell a story as well.
But dance has no label for that. So this is interesting what you brought up. So if you think about one of the major modern choreographers in the world, Merce Cunningham, who's passed away. He worked with John Cage,
who was
a composer. The dancers never knew the music that they were going to be dancing to. Did they dance? Yes. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant dancers. Brilliant choreography. But it wasn't to the music. The music got layered on and often changed every night.
And Cage was known for his just spontaneity based on what sounds were happening in the environment and things.
And screeching and not melodic. And So... There are many different ways that choreographers deal with music or sound. One of the pieces that is being danced to is to a text being read. It becomes music. And what is music? So I guess the question comes, what is music? I mean, music isn't always Brahms or Tchaikovsky or, rock and roll or whatever. It's a sound. Sound. Could be music that you're going
to
move
to. It.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and you don't have to. You can. I mean, how many times do you walk down the street with all these kids plugged in,
moving to their own groove?
You don't hear it. They're not moving to their own. They're listening to music. You don't hear the music. Are they dancing? Yeah, they're dancing.
We are getting very deep.
Not really, but if you'd like this, let's have some more to drink. It'll get deeper. Yeah.
Well, no, I enjoyed that. A little lively debate on the two. Because I'm trying to think if I've gone to see a movement piece, what my expectation would have been. But
I think that you brought up something really interesting. Because who did I just hear talk about this? I just heard somebody talking about this. An audience... Hath a good audience person who goes to see a live show should realize that they're going to an exciting adventure, that to go with a preconceived notion is going to ruin the experience for you.
Hmm.
That going to see live theater is about being really open. You cannot expect something. And what you get is the journey. So, unfortunately, we have turned the arts in America, like everything else in this country, into a consumer-based product. That's an oxymoron, but a consumer-based activity.
Mm-hmm.
I paid for this, it better be good. Which I've been there, done that, and I've said it. There was a man who I met here on the phone once when I was running the Dance Alloy Theater and was talking to him about a booking for the company. And I can't remember, it was something. And he said, well, you know what I've always wanted to do? He said, I've wanted to do a thing where people could get their money back if they didn't like the show.
He's always wanted to do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had to laugh, and I thought, at first I thought it was a very funny idea, and I thought, fine. And then I thought to myself, but no, they're not buying this. You're coming to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And experiencing something is very different than buying something.
Yes.
You know, I'd like to buy this coat. It's a lovely coat. I can feel the quality of it. I know. I try it on. It fits me. I'm not experiencing the coat. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what's happening. This could go to colleges. People, you know, the whole university system of people suddenly going, looking at students as clients.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a good thing.
No, no, no. And it always makes me wonder, you know, the shows that sell the most are these dusty revivals that people have seen 100 times. That's what they want to go see again.
It's secure.
Yeah.
Because it's in control. I get to control what I watch on TV when I watch it. I get to control what I listen to on Pandora. I get to control what I listen to. And I don't even have to answer the phone because I know who's calling.
Mm-hmm.
So our ability to experience things is...
Nobody likes to be surprised anymore.
No. I mean, I remember when people, you'd call people, right? And I remember at the beginning of this when somebody would go, hey, Beth, and I'd go, how do you know it's me? And they go, I have caller ID. And I'd go, well, that sort of sucks. That takes the fun out of shit, doesn't it? I mean, there's no surprises in life anymore. Yeah.
So we can all let go of control and come and enjoy Corning Works.
Absolutely. This is not something you would expect.
Or could possibly anticipate.
Even the people who had seen it before, another iteration, this is not what you saw before.
And there's great fun, I think, after two of the performances. Well, after one, Sharon Brady's going to be giving sort of a talk back, maybe a moderated talk back.
Mm-hmm. I'm always a little bit skittish as a performer after I've performed, having to talk to an audience, in the sense that I've just spent an hour creating a world for you, and then I turn around and go, oh, so you want my number?
Yeah.
It's like, let me break all this down. So I've started to bring in people to ask the performers and talk and sort of be the liaison.
Oh, very good.
Because as an audience member, I'm seriously not interested in having the wall broken for me.
Mm-hmm.
I much prefer to go away and go, if it was good.
Leave it on the stage.
Leave it. Mm-hmm. I want to take that home in my little heart, and I want to think about it.
Yeah.
But Sharon Brady is a wonderful educator, wonderful actress, a real personality.
Oh, yes.
So I think that this conduit's going to be quite wonderful. Yeah, she comes on Thursday, and then on Friday is our birthday celebration.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You should come. We've got Grigri, which is John Gresh's band, which is New Orleans, jazz and rock and roll, Americana
stuff.
Oh,
it's a great evening.
Yeah, and champagne and fabulous desserts.
Well, what
from
Zeke's
and the cakery. Fabulous stuff. And fun. It's going to be fun.
Sounds like.
Yeah. And then Sunday is our pay what you can. I've done that since I moved here. And so that really means that you, if you're one of those people that want your money worth, you can come and pay anything you want.
There you go.
$0.10, $10,000. We take it.
Anything goes.
Anything goes. Good. Anything goes.
Very good. What are your thoughts on Corningware?
Corningware, well, actually, Corningware is actually really good. We had a lot of it. Corning Glass, I have my issues with because Corning Glass voted for, you know, supported Jesse Helms.
Oh.
And you don't know who that is, do you?
I know the name. He
the NEA. He was one of the Jesse Helms was a senator who took the money away from the NEA because they supported artists that did things that he didn't think were appropriate.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you.
So I stopped calling up Corning Glass asking for funding. Because I just said, you know what, I don't have the same politics you do.
No, but I have a Corningware dish that I swear by.
Oh, they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
not part of my family.
Oh, I know. Does anybody ever get it confused?
Only twice. Once when my family was in Venice. And this is many years ago, and we went in. My father we went to a very nice hotel, and we went up to the room that they had reserved, and quite a long time ahead of the trip, and it was by a laundry shaft or a heating shaft or something. And my mother said, "No way, I'm not gonna pay all this money for this to happen." The lights going.
Yeah,
weird. And he sort of went like this, and the guy at the desk said, "Oh, Corning." And he thought it was Corning Glass.
Oh, my.
So we got this fabulous room.
But you didn't correct them.
No, should I go turn the lights back on?
Well, we're probably wrapping, okay. You know.
It has a more dramatic light.
I know, this is great. It's almost like now we're kind of like in secrets.
We have to whisper.
Now we talk about the dirty stuff.
Yeah, now we get down to brass tacks. Yes.
Yeah. Are we getting the bum's rush? Is that what it is?
I don't think so. I think it was on a timer.
Maybe.
Show's over.
Because, you know, with this bright light, I barely could tell. And I'm listening to you talking. I'm like, are we in the pitch black now?
Yeah, it's your aging.
But actually, you can see the shot there. It looks pretty good. We're well lit.
Actually, I can't because I don't have my glasses on, but that's okay.
Oh, yeah, but that light will do it. Well, that is great. No, anything that was crucial that we feel that we didn't really cover? There were a lot of great subjects.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so. I think people have to get out more.
Yes.
I mean, you really do.
Yes.
I mean, I think that, you know, the problem is that this show preaches to the choir. The people who watch this are people who go out.
Mm-hmm.
I really think so.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe the conversation might really be that because this is a choir that gets it, right? That if they could convince their friends to come with them, which is always hard. I mean, I've had friends where, come on, let's go. And they're like, I don't go see dance. Yeah, but this is not dance. This is not So You Think You Can Dance. Right. This is not theater. These are really the top performers. These are critically acclaimed, national and internationally critically acclaimed performers that are doing some of the... They're good.
Mm-hmm.
They're good. And you don't have to know who Dick and Jane is to come see this show. You don't have to be over 40. In fact, my daughter's 17 now, and she's brought her friends over the years. And these kids bring their parents now because they just... This is provocative work. Mm-hmm. I try to do really provocative work.
And I think, too, for somebody that maybe has not seen a lot of dance or maybe has that misconception of a dance show, this would be a great experience for them.
Yeah.
And really open their eyes and maybe change.
People who like theater or people who like film or people... You know, I mean, it's an evening out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's not expensive And certainly, which is why we do the Sunday matinees for people who really feel, I can't afford that, and I get that. Mm-hmm. I'm an artist, I get that.
So after that, there is no excuse for not coming to see this show.
No, not really.
You're throwing in champagne.
Yeah.
John Gresh's band.
John Gresh, we're pulling out the stops. We're feeding you, we're wining and dining you, we got music.
We dance for you.
We dance for you, we do a little Hamlet. We do a little bit of everything, you know.
Oh, great. We are looking forward to seeing it, Beth.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful. Good conversation.
So.
Cheers.
Cheers.
To Corning Works.
Yeah.
And to the future.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.